Blog Talk Radio.
923, I'll give you a corrected address, but you have a fire in a one story ordinary. Looks like it's about 40 by 120,
125.
I'm coming down
it
right now.
Over to 273-273. Over to Battalion 18-18 Battalion. Over to 273-273.
Welcome to Politics and Tactics. Tonight we got a great show for you. We got Dave Polycoff in Montgomery County, Maryland. We got Pat Passaris and Danny Coughlin, who might just yell some things in from the choir. We got Nick Papa and PJ Norwood. We got Mark Vendetto, Greg Bovin. We got full cast of characters tonight. And here's Nick Papa and PJ Norwood.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the show tonight. We got a good show lined up for you. We're going to be all over the map with topics. So if anybody wants to call in and ask some questions or bring up a topic, please feel free to do so. BJ?
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me tonight. It should be a good show with Dave Polycoff on, Frank Rich and yourself. You guys always run great shows and, you know, a lot going on. I think we should, whether you liked him or didn't like him, recognize the loss of John McCain. I think it's an important moment in the history to recognize John McCain and the loss to his family. And also today is the anniversary of the death of Howard Karplunk and Michael Riley. Michael Riley was a Connecticut firefighter from Stratford who transferred to FDNY. A lot of friends here in Connecticut, so our respects out to FDNY and the families of Karplunk and Michael Riley on today's anniversary.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, PJ. And for anybody that's not familiar with that incident, it's definitely worth looking into, and especially from a leadership standpoint, because one of Lieutenant Karplunk's last words were, take care of, save my probie, were one of the last words that he uttered out. So in his last moments, he was thinking about nothing else but the probie that was assigned to him, which was Michael Riley. So it's a selfless act of leadership and bravery in his last moments. So for anybody who's not really familiar with that incident, please go look into it. It's very worthwhile and to honor their memory. Dave, what do you got?
Actually, like I said, on call tonight, but had a little fire yesterday in a lab, and actually went pretty smooth. Started off as an automatic fire alarm, and crews quickly upgraded the assignment. It was working on a Sunday, and nobody there, and one of the machineries caught some debris on fire. The crews worked flawless. I watched them actually advance a 500. They had to make a 500-foot line to advance into the building. So impressive work all the way around by the guys in the 1st Battalion.
Excellent, excellent. And you got some good news, too, from the FDIC commission, I hear.
Yes, that's right. I got my hour and 45-minute class. I expanded into a HOT program for command. It's Command Under Fire, and it's all about the incident command system and how to take command and give an on-scene reports, size-ups, situational awareness. That's going to be a four-hour HOT program, classroom HOT program, where guys and gals that are in the room will be put, for lack of a better word, in the hot seat. They'll have radios in hand. They'll be communicating with role players in another room while they're watching a simulation program on the screen and commanding, putting out fires. So it's, I'm really looking forward to it going back. It's going to be my third time presenting at FDIC, probably my 12th time being there. It's an outstanding place to go, and it's probably if not the biggest, at least one of the biggest firefighting trade show training shows all rolled into one. It's the place to be every year.
Dave, I've taken your class before. It's a phenomenal class, and for all our listeners tonight, please check out Fire Engineering's Command Inside and Out. Dave and I put together a feature article that covers the pros and the outside. Get a call?
I don't think so. I think I'll be all right.
So, PJ, you and your counterpart, Sean, are heading back as well, right, for both Classroom and HOT?
Yeah, so we were blessed enough to have our hands-on 8-hour hands-on live fire class again selected this year, which is a host of instructors from around the country, from FDNY, retired in Chicago, Los Angeles County, Georgia, Connecticut, four or five stations of working in the flow path between fire attack and fire behavior and search in the modern environment. It's our hands-on class. Sean will be teaching the classroom. I'll have a classroom as well. Our classroom, the Evolving Fire Ground, is a little different than most classes out there. We have a goal of less than 10 slides for an hour, 45-minute class. And the topic is very, it's like this show, very free-flowing. We have a couple of points that we want to discuss, and we kind of feed off the crowd and discuss the research in the Evolving Fire Ground. And we just take it from A to Z, as much as we can cover in that hour, 45 minutes, and really get the involvement of the attendees. And it's different because we're not held any slides. There's no slides. There's no words. We have some videos kind of built into the program. So if we're discussing, you know, searching the flow path, we can go to a video and show. If we're talking about exterior water, we can go to a video and show it. If we're talking about vertical ventilation, we got a video in there that we can show. But it's all free-flowing, off the cuff, kind of like a tag team class. And had really good reviews the last 2 years on that. And Sean will be teaching Tackling the Burn Site again, which – it's amazing that that class still draws what it does. I think this is his fifth or sixth year running that class in an hour and 45. He updates it every year, but it's still the same class. He draws a standing only every year for that class. So it should be another busy and fun FDIC as always.
Yeah,
hey, Frank. It's Dave. I got to roll out. I'll call back in a few, okay?
All right, sounds good. All right, so I will also be heading back out to FDIC for my third time, and I'll be doing another vent class out there as well, another hour and 45-minute lecture. And for anyone who sat in on my previous two classes, it's continued to evolve progressively, and it's going to be a completely different class than what you sat in on either of those two times. So I'm very excited to roll that back out again, and it's just very exciting to be able to be a part of something so big and so impactful on the fire service community. So why don't we also just roll right into some topics tonight. And you know, PJ, you've been very actively involved with the UL research, and there's been a lot of topics going on online with the continued education that UL has been providing with their Tuesday videos that they've been putting up on all the social media platforms. What do you have to say on what's been coming out as far as the updates and new information?
Well, I think what's good is as far as those Tuesday videos that they're coming out with is they're up in the game, I call it. You know, if you take a look at, you know, the most recent one, which has caused a lot of social media controversy, pushing fire, they actually didn't say anything different than what they said originally. Yeah, there were some instructors or some other groups that may have said some different things. But what UL is doing is they're putting out this information and they're trying to make us smarter. Instead of just saying you can't push fire, they're giving us the ways you can and can't. Because we all know that, you know, if you've been looking at the research from the beginning, an inappropriately used hose stream could push smoke, fire, heat, gases around the environment. But there have been a lot of people, and I have been one of those, you know, because of social media, you say, well, you know, you can't push fire. You take these snippets of information. So I think what UL is doing is they're really trying to up the game and not trying to dumb down the information. And I remember being out at UL at Northbrook, I think it was about 4 years ago, for this story.
Oh, yeah.
It was for the first time I met Chief Van Dorp. I don't even know if I met him at that point yet. And we're talking about rolling out, getting out information, and I was trying to deliver a message on an opinion, and he jumped all up and jumped all over me, and that we can't dumb down the information, that we have to give the fire service all of the information available. And I think that's what UL is doing right now. And the controversy and the what I think draws to it is I think there's a lot of members of the fire service, they're not reading reports, which there's not a lot of firefighters that are going to read a 400, 500, 600, 700-page report and truly be able to understand a lot of it. There's a lot of that information that's even above my level. You know, and you have to go through it and read it and review it and talk and learn it, and a lot of information. So there's a lot of firefighters across the country that have been taking snippets of information from everybody, and they don't know what's behind it. They don't have the knowledge of the information or the research that brought that tidbit of information, and that's causing some problems. You know, and UL comes out with the same information that they came out with in the report, but not a lot of people have read those reports.
Exactly.
So that's where some of the problems are. So if you're listening to the show, either live or kind of in the archive, I would encourage you, you know what, read the report. But I know that's not for everybody. So at least go to UL, take the free training. They have free training modules on every topic. You can do individually. You can do as a crew. You can do around the kitchen table. It's all online, and it's all free. It'll increase your knowledge. It'll make you smarter, and I believe it's going to make you more aggressive.
I agree, and you beat me to the punch as far as actually doing your own homework, and whether that's reading the actual reports or it's going through the modules, which are extremely user-friendly. So if you're not the type of person that can sit there and comb through a very high-level academic research paper like those reports, which I'm right with you, PJ. I mean, with some of the reports, you have to research the research just because of the level of that's involved with them. So I really, my hat's off to UL with going at the lengths that they've gone to ensure that the information is properly conveyed to everyone in the fire service, because obviously everyone has different learning styles, different levels of education. So they've really gone above and beyond to, with their social media campaign, putting out the formal academic research paper. And then also with these modules that are online, which are extremely user-friendly, and they're easily digestible. They're just, you can sit down in a single sitting. It's not, they don't belabor you with information. It's really the meat and potatoes of the information, the practical information that you can readily apply on the fire ground. And as PJ said, to make yourself more aggressive, because the more knowledgeable you are, the better you're able to read the conditions and be more aggressive, because you can better predict how the fire in the building is going to react based on what you see and being able to connect those dots.
And make better decisions. Make better tactical decisions on the fire ground. Whether you're an entry-level firefighter or you're an officer, the more you know, the better it's going to be for everybody in that fire.
Absolutely. And I just want to take a second. We have a few callers here.
Did he take
the 203-258-8667 that we have on the line.
Three came in. I get a call. I'm at 33. Oh, we're going off sewers. I'm like, okay, no problem. Go ahead.
Hey, Dave, you back on?
Yeah, I'll back on.
Okay, Dave, you're back on. Who's calling from the 203 number?
That is not me. I'm 4.
All right, looks like that person got dropped. So.
Hey.
All right, we're gonna continue on with the call. Dave, everything all good?
Yeah, they put everybody in service as soon as they got to the bottom of the steps. So
your
we're good.
Shows up, so you're in it.
All right.
So then he only knows you by your number.
Okay. All right, now that we got the phone call situation squared away, let's get back to it. So as far as the social media piece of it goes, just really before you weigh in, just make sure that you've done your own homework before you challenge somebody or the message that they're providing. And the other thing to keep in mind too is it's very difficult to read what somebody's actually saying on social media, especially on Twitter, because you're limited to so few characters. So you can't really pick apart what somebody's tone of voice is, where they're coming from. So somebody may come across as attacking you or being sarcastic. So it's really tough to read through. So just make sure your message is clear, and that if you're going to challenge somebody or challenge the information that you've read or you think you've heard from somewhere, just make sure you've done your own homework and you're coming back with something that's equally beneficial and educational for everybody. Because that's part of the problem, is what's going on out there, is everybody's just clouding the internet with just a barrage of information, and a lot of it's opinionated, or somebody just read a few snippets or skimmed through the executive summary and is now doing their own interpretation of the data instead of actually looking into what actually happened, what the message that's being conveyed, and what UL's tactical recommendations are. So, like I said, before you weigh in, just make sure that you're educated yourself before you decide to take a stance and put your own stamp on things, because somebody that may be more junior and with less time on, that may be a little bit more impressionable, may take that as gospel. So just make sure we're putting good messages out there. So, Dave, anything else you want to add in? We were just talking about the UL testing and some of the controversy that's been going on with opinions about pushing fire and other things that have been happening on social media, specifically Twitter lately.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think we're ever going to be able to put, you know, a squash on that. People are going to have their own opinions, and, you know, everybody thinks that they're right. the fire server, the fires itself, or the way things that are burning, you know, the science is, I wouldn't say the science is changing. It's always been there, but we're learning it. We're learning more about it. And you're only making yourself better when you are learning about how buildings burn, how materials burn, the direction that smoke and heat move. It's only going to make us better. And when there's a new way of doing things, the fire service is always resistant to change. I mean, how do you think it went from horses to gasoline fire engines? You know, there was probably a resistance to change. You know, same thing with our SCBA, and, or not when they weren't wearing SCBA. So, again, just to kind of dovetail what you guys were talking about, know what the UL report is saying. Read the information before you formulate an opinion, you know, and actually do the research. And you know, how about a novel idea of actually picking up the phone or sending an email or text message to somebody that was involved in it and ask a question, you know, if you're not sure about something, but playing armchair quarterback or just turning your nose up to the information that's been put out there is the wrong direction to go. And like was said, these newer guys are very impressionable, and they're looking to the senior guys for guidance. And when they're given the wrong guidance, they're heading down the wrong road.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, there's certain guys out there that are just making comments for the shock value of it, and that's how they, you know, tend to promote themselves and get their following on social media. So unfortunately, these conversations get dragged down just for the pure entertainment value of it, and the educational and training piece of it gets lost in the mix, unfortunately. So that's one of the things I'd love to see go by the wayside, but unfortunately that's reality, and that's marketing for you. But one of the quotes that I really love that Aaron Fields drops all the time in his class is like, just when you think you're new or original, you haven't looked at the history enough. And after I sat through his class, because he drops a lot of history throughout his program, was I've been an avid reader since I joined. I started in the fire service, and I would. Any chance I got, I would grab any book that I could. So, you know, in my office, I've got, you know, all the Dunn's books, Clark's book, you know, all the classics. So after I sat through his class, I went through and started digging through all these books. And lo and behold, especially when it comes to ventilation, you want to talk about, you know, information being there all along. You know, William Clark's book is a treasure trove of information, and so much of it dovetails with what the data has brought to light, or really, I should say, validated, that a lot of these, the kind of the godfathers of the fire service have been preaching all along through their experiences and through their own, you know, research. Because Clark did, you know, some of the first, you know, fire dynamics research, which was pretty revolutionary for its time back in, you know, the 60s, 70s. So just, you know, go back and look at some of those books, the classic authors and, you know, fire service icons, because a lot of that information, especially when it pertains to, you know, tactics and, you know, the fire behavior and the fire dynamics, it's all still relevant, and it's what the research has now validated with data for the most part. So just, you know, go back and, you know, do your own homework, do your research, and, you know, it helped better the fire service with good dialogue instead of this nonsense that's been going on. All right, so let's move on to the next topic. So, PJ, I want to talk a little bit more about your hot class and some of the stations that you guys have set up with your class. So, you want to take a chance to take the opportunity to go through and tell the listeners what you guys are going to be tackling and, you know, some of the messages that you're going to be providing for the students that attend.
Yeah, absolutely, Nick. Thanks. So one of the stations, of course, is the Dahlhaus Burns. We usually put Stevan Stevenson, myself, Captain John Cirillo, and new addition last year, Battalion Chief Frank Lieb from FDNY, together. We talk about fire behavior. Sit everybody outside on some benches under a tent. We burn a Dahlhaus, but we actually go through fire behavior 101 from the ground on up. But how it actually applies to your fire ground. So that's one station. Another station, the LA County guys do a hands-on live fire behavior. So they go into the can and they go through, you know, flashover, rollover, and really get up close and personal fire behavior. So you take it from the small-scale exercise to the live fire hands-on. There's also a live fire search class. That's broken up into two stations, so they work on venom or isolate search and searching techniques on the outside in a clean, sterile environment. Then they go into, and it's a third floor live fire, doing venom or isolate search in a live fire environment, basically building on the skills they learned outside. Another group of LA County instructors, they go through, they split the group up in half, so it's one, it's another two stations, but it occupies the 1 hour, and they split in half, and they talk about looking at the building and reading the building, looking at volume, velocity, density of smoke, so they're working on their size up and being able to choose the appropriate tactics for the conditions that you have. The other half of that station is like a water mapping station. You know, there's been so much talk about, you know, fire flows and hose and nozzles, and there's not a lot of discussion on, well, what happens when the water leaves the nozzle? What's actually happening to it? You know, when I first started talking about exterior water and transitional tack, I was under the impression that, well, you know, if I'm going to flow water in the window, the water's going to go up, hit the ceiling, and it's going to immediately bank down, just like a sprinkler head would, right? Because that was my level of understanding, knowledge, and experience. But we found out that that actually doesn't happen, right? Depending on the angle, depending on the height, depending on the velocity, a lot of that water surfs across the ceiling, and then it washes down all the walls of the room. It actually doesn't fall directly below where the stream is actually hitting. Some of it does. But also depending on the heat and what's burning, there's a lot of factors that go into that. So we have a hallway mate, and we talk about water mapping and what happens when the water leaves the nozzle. And we show them firsthand based on their nozzle technique. You know, there's lots of nozzle techniques, whether you do, you know, the T, the Z, the O, or the upside down U, or, you know, the flow move. There's, that all impacts how the water leaves the nozzle and what's happening to it. So we try to show them that the flow and move technique, which is in consistent with the fire attack study research, flow and move, and we show them what happens to the water firsthand in an environment that they can see. So whatever nozzle technique they choose when they go back to their fire ground, they can understand more than what's happening. It's not just open bell and push down a hallway, that they get a clearer understanding of the research behind flowing water. So that's kind of the class in a nutshell. It's a full eight hour day. We're hoping this year we get some better weather. Last year was pretty challenging in the rain. But we pushed through. We had a sold out class last year. We're looking for the same. So if it's something that, if some of the listeners are interested, I advise them to, you know, register early, because I would anticipate last year was our first year of live fire. So I'm sure there were some people that were a little hesitant on it. Is you know, understandably, there's other classes that are live fire that are long term classes there. But this is our second year of live fire, and reviews were great. We're up in the game a little bit this year. We have some new things up our sleeves, so it should be a lot of fun.
Very nice. Does this take place in an acquired structure or is this a fixed facility?
It's a fixed facility.
Okay. All right. Right on. So this is a good opportunity for anybody that, you know, may be a little skeptical when it comes to the research and, you know, the more academic side of the fire service. Now here's the opportunity for you to take a lot of those concepts and principles and that knowledge and apply it directly into the practical sense. So, you know, PJ and his cadre of instructors have gone through all the research, many of them being directly involved with the research projects themselves, and now they've done all the research, they've digested all the material and taken it and broken them down into skill stations. So now for the person that doesn't want to sit there and read the research, that doesn't want to, you know, do their own homework, that just wants to get down and dirty and get their hands on the equipment and do the actual evolutions, here's your opportunity to really see firsthand how important this information is, because there are some people that are apprehensive to the level of academics that have kind of been going on in the fire service and how things have progressed. But it's important because this information is allowing us to, as PJ said, to be more aggressive. And the better we understand the environment that we work in, the equipment that we have, the tactics that we're employing, the better we can execute those tactics. And the more effective we're going to be on the fire ground because we have that level of understanding. We know the impact that these tactics are actually having instead of just relying on, you know, well, this has worked for me before and, you know, in the past I've done this and, you know, I've done X and Y has happened. Well, okay, is that just coincidence or timing of other things or what's actually happening and how can we improve ourselves and make ourselves more effective, more aggressive, and this is how you do that. And it's, you know, through the efforts of, you know, organizations like UL and NIST and IFSI, you know, we have this constant flow of new information and knowledge to be shared throughout the fire service to make us better.
And the only thing I want to add, and the reason we encourage people to come to the class is for those that are kind of on the fence. You know, and there's a lot of firefighters and officers out there that are on the fence. We like to show them that you don't have to throw away everything that you're currently doing. You know, some people think that, research-based tactics means you take everything that we've always done, everything we've always known, everything that's always worked, and stop doing it. And it's the complete opposite. We need to take everything that we know and enhance it, become a little bit smarter, use our current tactics and our current techniques, and maybe just tweak them a little bit, right? Because there's a lot of things that we do on the fire ground that are good, that work really well, but taking an extra step here or doing a little, tweaking, your search a little bit, take the orientated search that we've all done, and by putting that firefighter or that officer in the hallway, right? Not just put them inside the room. One little change makes the environment a little bit better, a little bit safer, and you can have a search that's going to go much, much quicker. So it's taking our current tactics and enhancing them, not changing, not throwing away the playbook, not starting over from scratch, just building upon all of our experience and all of the research that's out there and putting it together.
And it's about about expanding the playbook, too. It's all about options because things are much different for PJ in East Haven than they are for me in New Britain, and they're different from the way that things are done for Frank in New Haven as they are for Dave and down in Maryland. It's everybody's situation is different. The building stock is different. Resources, manning, staffing, there's an infinite number of variables that are going to impact how you actually employ the tactics that you have at your disposal. And, part of this whole experience going out to FDIC, listening to instructors lecture or sitting in hot classes from instructors from all over the country, it gives you that broad exposure to what else is out there because we tend to get insulated in our areas. Connecticut's a small state, so we tend to, stick to Connecticut and how we typically do things and, based on, our building stock and resources, et cetera. But there's so much more out there. And even if you can't apply it directly as another person or department is doing so, you can still, there's still good information to glean and good experiences to gain from exposing yourself to other options, because there may be that one time on the fire ground where you're faced with a situation where that particular tactic may work or may be the best option. So that's all it is. It's about understanding what your options are so you can make the best decision for your fire ground. That's the biggest thing. I have an article that I just submitted to Fire Engineering for review, and that is the huge emphasis of the article is, making decisions based on your department and what you're currently facing in front of you on your fire ground. That's the biggest thing is, no matter what you think is, the latest and greatest tactic or piece of equipment, it needs to work for you and your department and your fire ground. That's the ultimate goal is we want to make people to be good decision makers and to make the right calls to, again, achieve our mission, which is to protect life and property to the best to our ability. Dave, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I agree 100%. where I am, that's one of the beauties of teaching with the company I work with on the side, is we get to travel up and down the East Coast and towards the little bit west and seeing how these departments, their manpower and the equipment that they have and the tactics they deploy and the different type of structures that they run and at the core they're all trying to do the same thing, but you can't just shoehorn someone's specific idea of how it works in New York City or how it works in Chicago and put that out in Main Street USA. It's not going to work. So like you said, Nick, you got to take the tactics and take the information and take the equipment and apply it to the fires that you run in your jurisdiction with the manpower that you have, with the type of structures that you have, with the apparatus that you have, and then make it work that way. And there's no one specific way to do something. You have to tailor it towards your what you have in your department with manpower and the logistics That's the neat thing of getting out of my county, where we're pretty resource heavy in the Washington metropolitan area, and seeing how people achieve the exact same goals that I do at work with the lack of resources and logistics and manpower and things like that they have, but they're still making it work because they found a way to do it given the new sciences that are out there, and based on the latest and the greatest. And I think it's pretty neat to see things like that. Even going to the National Fire Academy and sitting down with a lot of chief officers that have a lot of time in, but don't have a lot of manpower or the money in their organization, still achieving what needs to be done, you know, for the citizens that they protect. I think it's pretty interesting.
And going out to FDIC and a lot of these other conferences that are out there, I know Dave and I just went out to MAFSE. It was my first time going down to the Metro Atlanta Firefighters Conference, and you know what a great experience that was too, just to get out of your comfort zone, get to a different region of the country to see how they're doing things, and to just interact with a different demographic of firefighters. It's just a really great opportunity, and FDIC is just going to give you that opportunity that you're not going to be able to get really anywhere else, because you're getting people from literally all over the world, and just the connections that you make, and the networking, and even just the after hours. Or, I mean, whether you're into the bar scene or not, you're a drinker or not, you go down to the bars or the restaurants, and the conversations, they don't stop. I mean, some of the best conversations I've had have been outside of the classroom or outside of the conference area. I mean, at MAFSE in particular, I mean, I think Rick George and I sat down by the pool next at the hotel, just, you know, talking shop for, had to be 2 hours. It was some of the best conversation I had during the week. It's just a great opportunity to just meet new people, make friends, and I can't say enough about it. PJ, how many years have you been going down now?
I think this will be my sixth year teaching, and I've been going probably 10 years from there, 10, 11 years from there. I forget what year we started going, but like I said, there's nothing better. And, you know, part of the problem I hear from, you know, friends of mine, it's just, you know, it's so expensive. It's hard to get there, you know, airfare, hotels, and show fees and everything else. And, yeah, absolutely, it is. However, you get everything that you put into it, you get back. If you go and you take the time, you know, take Dave's class, for instance. You know, he's doing a command class. He's got portable radios in his class. You know, and he puts people on the spot. And you're going to be commanding, you know, other firefighters from around the country. Or you may have somebody, an international officer, running a fire in Dave Polikoff's class, you know, to your class, to tactical ventilation from a mid-sized department in Connecticut where you're not showing up. You don't have 300 firefighters at your disposal, to a instructor that's an all-volunteer department, you know, that shows up with maybe five on a good day. You know, so no matter what you're looking for, no matter what size department you come from, or just, you know, they'll have something for you. And then, you know, the after-hour stuff, usually by the end of the day, I'm so exhausted from teaching and everything else, and not being a drinker, and usually turning kind of early, but and the conversations and the activities and the after events, so it just doesn't stop during the day between the fun runs and the stair climb and the bashes. There's just so much to do. We could talk for 5 hours just on the things to do at FDIC.
And PJ, I'm glad you brought up the financial side of things. And yes, it is a financial commitment, but it is an investment for those that are going to do it. But even if you desperately want to go and you just can't financially make it work, there's the scholarship program out there. You know, Honeywell, you know, does an incredible program to offer full scholarships. And I mean, everything is covered from start to finish. You don't miss out on a single thing. And I believe you get invited to a lot of events that the regular attendee doesn't have the opportunity to attend. So it's an incredible opportunity. So I believe they just started accepting applications, if I saw the social media posts from FDIC correctly. So if that's something that is either you're interested in or you want to nominate someone else, please do so, because it's a tremendous opportunity that Honeywell affords for anybody who's looking to attend. So look into that. If you go on any of the social media outlets or FDIC.com, you can get the information to nominate a worthy recipient to get a free ride to FDIC.
And I'm just
There's
trying to bring that up.
If one of the things that I found out is, when you buy equipment from local dealers, believe it or not, there's dealers from all over the world, vendors that are at FDIC, and if you buy nozzles or hose from somebody in particular and you do business with them, if you just say, hey, can you get us, you know, passes to the show, it might reduce your cost a little bit. You may have to pay for some other things, but at least to be able to get there, you know, your airfare and things, it's a show you don't want to miss. The classes that are there are phenomenal. The things that are people coming up with, you know, I like to sit in for the week, even though, you know, the days that I'm not teaching, I'm sitting in on classes and you know, people that I don't know just popping in. So it's another route you can look at with a lot of these vendors. They have show passes that they've paid for, and some of them may even come off with some for you. So it's another option.
All right. So, Dave, I want to give you the opportunity to, you know, PJ went through his class. So what are some of the highlights for the students that will be attending or who are interested in attending your class? You know, what are some of the things they can expect? What do they get? What do you hope these students to gain out of attending your class?
One of the first things I do is we talk, you know, we have a PowerPoint presentation. It's probably about 30 to 40 slides. It's not a lot because the program is a hands-on training program. But we want to make sure that we're on a level playing field. So we talk a little bit about NIMS because that's the that's the law of the land, per se, of how we run command. We use the NIMS platform. So we talk a little bit about NIMS, and we talk about definitions of what things mean, of what we're going to use on the fire ground, the terminology and things like that. And then we talk about line officers and their responsibilities as as riding the front seats of engines and trucks and rescue squads, and how to do a size of a building, how to give a decent on-scene report so you're, for lack of better words, you're painting the picture for the units that are coming in so they know what to expect, giving layout instructions, getting a look as many sides of the building as you can, and relaying that all on the radio in a calm manner. A lot of people have never had radios in their hands before. Or, you know, a lot of them they say, "Well, I'm just a firefighter." And I said, "Well, 3 o'clock in the morning, you might be the officer. So you may have to learn how to communicate on the radio." And then we talk about command officers and what their roles and responsibilities are, and how they differ from the line officers that are riding the apparatus, and how they set up their command and the things that they have to say on the radio. Getting the information, you know, asking specific questions to get pertinent information so they can base how the command is going to run and then how they're going to set up their divisions and their sectors, if that's the direction they're going, or groups and things like that. And commanding the incident from start to finish, all while seeing what's going on the screen when we have the simulation. At the same time, we're going to teach everybody how to use tactical worksheets so they can track the units that are coming in on the fire ground. So they're going to have a certain number of engines and trucks and rescue squads and ambulances and things like that. And they're going to have to, you know, capture all that information down on a hard form, and they're going to have to start breaking them down in divisions and groups and making sure that they can track those units throughout the entire fire process when they leave the staging area and into a division or a group, and then from there into rehab and then assigning them somewhere else. So we're going to teach them how to use tactical worksheets, and then we're going to teach them how to command fires and give direction on the radio, give objectives on the radio, and then get that feedback and adjust if they have to. And I have about 15 to 20 incidents that are already built with maps, buildings, various degrees of fire and smoke and things coming out, small maydays. You know, we can throw a variety of things at them and let them think under pressure. And, you know, at the end of the day, there's no wrong answer. We're here to guide you in the right direction and provide you with information on how to either ride the front seat of a fire engine and how to give good on-scene reports and your situational awareness, or how to be a command officer. You may have somebody that's going from captain to battalion chief and giving them a little bit of an edge on running these incidents. Some people have never been in the front seat of a fire engine or have never commanded an incident before. Why not practice before you actually go? We do it for firefighters when they come into to the fire service. We run them through recruit school. We don't just give them gear and go throw them to the wolves and have them go into a fire. We teach them. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to teach them on a level playing field. We give them a way, and then they can take it and run with it however they want. The feedback from the class, whether we've done it the hour and 45-minute class at FDIC, and then we've been teaching it up and down the East Coast for about a year and a half to 2 years now, and it's it's the feedback is really good. We got the opportunity. One of the first classes we did was actually in New Haven with Frank's guys, and the feedback was phenomenal. And we knew that we could tweak it a little bit, and we had a really good product on our hands. So I'm really excited about this four-hour program and bringing people in. It's going to be a smaller environment because it's a hot class, so everybody will get ample opportunity to command these fires and run them through as many scenarios as they want until time's up. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm really excited about it.
That sounds great, and I think you're hitting a spot that's often overlooked, and there's definitely an art to speaking well on the radio and getting your point across, and especially for those command level officers, having that command presence over the incident and, you know, projecting that calm and concise tone over the radio and letting your companies working under you know that you've got everything under control. So I think that's you're going to afford people a tremendous opportunity, especially for those that aren't able to act up in a capacity of, you know, that ship commander or your battalion level chief. So for those that are aspiring to move up to that next role and be in that command car, to give them that ability to be in the hot seat and run through those different scenarios before they go through. And I'm sure we'll give them a leg up too when they go for their either assessment center or oral interview. So I think that's definitely something to keep your eyes out. And I would definitely encourage somebody to sit in on Dave's class. So Dave, anything else you got going on? I know you do some work with Capital Fire Training as well. Anything else you guys got going new in the works?
Yeah, we just came back from Wilmington, Delaware. We had one of the companies up there. It's a Five Points Fire Company, and right outside of Wilmington, actually had an old GM plant that was condemned back in 2009, and they have it for about 4 or 5 months before they finally tear it down. And it's 3.5 million square feet of abandoned building. And we did a trucks class, a varsity trucks class up there. That's what the name of the class is, varsity trucks class, because when you're on a special service, you step from JV to varsity. So we actually went and did some large area search, rooftop ventilation. We did side Charlie ventilation utilizing Halligan bar and rope, things like that, reading the building, RIT and Mayday drills. We had 2 days with this building that we operated in, and by the end of the class, the end of the second day, everybody was spent. It was a phenomenal class, and a massive building. It was just unbelievable how big this building was. And again, like we said, we have a couple other classes that are coming up in October, forcible entry class, and another truck company class. So we're just traveling up and down the East Coast and, networking with people, and we're having a good time. I know one of my stops has to be New Haven because I want to get there before it starts snowing. So I want to be in Frank's backyard to have a pizza or something. He keeps posting all the stuff he's doing. So we got to make it up there.
Yeah, we're definitely living it up right now with Frank's pizza and having some refreshments. So you're definitely going to have to make it up here to do a live show with us.
So
Nick, you
awesome.
Gave a chance to talk about our classes, and I think I was pretty lucky. I got to see your original FDIC class probably about a year and a half, maybe even 2 years prior to you actually teaching in FDIC, and it's completely evolved to a whole different animal. It's really grown and become as all these good classes do, become a life of its own. So what are you bringing back to FDIC this year? I know you gave us a chance, and why don't you tell the listeners that come to listen to you every month there on what you're going to be doing at FDIC this year.
I appreciate that. So as PJ said, the program has continued to evolve quite a bit year to year, and every time I present it and the interactions that I have with the students in the class, after the class, especially after MAFC too, one of the students I had was from Florida and had – we just had a great conversation because his department does not regularly conduct vertical ventilation. It's more of the exception than the rule. And he said they're starting to see an emergence of the hurricane-rated windows in his area, which is causing some challenges for them when they go to conduct horizontal ventilation as they typically do. Which works, and it's very effective for the building stock that they have. So really that's kind of what sparked me to write the article that I wrote, is you have to know what's going on in your area and know what the best tactics are going to be based on what's in front of you. So with the program that I have, the whole premise is to provide the students with what I like to call an operational framework. So I provide 10 different guidelines and key principles, which, you know, the principles are pretty standard. I mean, they're in a lot of different documents, the communicated, controlled, and, you know, just the three C's that they're referred to as. So that's the big thing, is that using those three principles to understand how ventilation needs to be executed, and then going through these 10 different fire ground guidelines to ensure that whatever tactic you go to employ, that it's going to be done effectively and in the safest manner possible, to ensure that we can be the most aggressive that we can be and, you know, do the most good for both the engine companies that are making the push, the guys that are performing the search, as well as, most importantly, the victims that we're trying to effect the rescues for. So that's the biggest piece of that. And I start out with just laying the groundwork of going through and actually explaining what ventilation is and how it works. I mean, everybody can give the yearbook answer of what ventilation is, that, you know, classic canned textbook definition, because I always start the class out with that and go around the room, and everybody's usually able to put together that perfect canned definition. But then when we actually go through and, okay, all right, that's great, we got the definition down, and it's amazing that with all the different people from different parts of the country that we're able to come up with that consensus definition. But when it comes to the nuts and bolts of how it actually works, now you start to get some crickets in the room. And it's like, all right, well, what do you mean? All right, well, how does air actually move? How do the products of combustion actually move throughout the building? How do our tactics impact that air movement and that fire behavior? Because everything is all interconnected. You know, one of the slides, I have a picture of the Newton's cradle, and it's that, you know, that law, the third law of motion, that, you know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So for us to make the correct tactical decisions on the fire ground, you have to know how those tactics actually work and the impact that they're going to have, so you can act accordingly and make the proper decisions. So there's a lot of the fire ground is very dynamic, and as, you know, the furnishings, the contents, the building stock has continued to change, you know, our margin for error continues to decrease. You know, the fire's reacting a lot quicker. It's more unforgiving. You know, the heat is rising faster. So we have to be that much more dialed in with our tactics, especially when it comes to ventilation, because, you know, you can very rapidly impact the fire ground for the good or for the bad with your ventilation tactics. So it's really instilling those principles of, you know, the science, you know, the physics of, you know, how air moves, and those basic principles without going too crazy, just the basic, you know, the basic premises of fire dynamics and air movement. So it really lays that foundation as we progress into that operational framework and go through, you know, the three C's and the 10 guidelines. So that way it provides that foundational knowledge and that context to really understand why those guidelines exist in the first place. So you can understand, okay, well, that's why they're telling me to, you know, to control the door before the line's in place, or, you know, that if I'm going to be doing a search to, you know, close the, you know, control the door behind me, all those things come into place. Or if I'm up on the roof, you know, making sure that there's water on the fire before we go ahead and, you know, louver that cut, or, you know, punch down that ceiling. So whichever tactics you decide to do, and that's the beauty of my program, is no matter whether you're from FDNY, you're from Palm Beach County, Florida, from LA County, or the smallest rural department out there, let's throw a little shout out to one of the guys that I spoke to on my first trip out to FDIC from Gilt Edge, out in the Midwest, and, you know, you're dealing with a handful. It's an all volunteer department with a handful of guys. No matter where you're from, no matter what your staffing levels are or your building stock, these are universal principles that you're going to be able to apply based on what you have before you, so you can understand and make the decisions that are going to best impact your fire ground.
And a couple things. First, shout out to Gilt Edge also, because if you're an instructor and you've been to FDIC or you've taught at NAFSE, you know the Gilt Edge fire guys. It's an amazing rule department with a small group of guys, but man, they are dialed in. So giving them a shout out. Their name just escaped me, but I'll never forget the department and those guys. But what I like about your class, and you know, part of the problem I think in the fire service for so many years is we're always taught just the good side. Well, if you take out a window, this is what the good that's going to happen.
Right.
If you flow water, this is the good that's going to happen. If you cut a hole in the roof, this is the positive that's going to happen. But we've always shied away for many years of the negative side of it, probably because of lack of knowledge. You know, all these bad things have been happening on the fire ground for years. You look at every line of duty death report, and things start lining up and start adding together, because we were never given the foundation of the positive but also the negative things that happen on the fire ground, because all our tactics have a negative side to it if they're done incorrectly. So that's one of the things I like about your class. You don't just talk about, you know, cutting a hole in the roof and all the good things that are going to happen. You also talk about the negative things if it's not done right.
And that's where I throw in a lot of personal experiences. And, you know, I fall on my own sword and talk about a lot of the negative experiences that I had. You know, the learning experiences that I had where, you know, you figured things out the hard way. And the how this class was born, this was the accidental class. And, you know, PJ is the man responsible for it, even, you know, being entertained of taking it to FDIC, because I actually just sent it to him to peer review it before I presented it to my department, and it was never supposed to leave my department. Was when I first got promoted, I got promoted off of a ladder company, and we sat through an officer development program up at the State Fire Academy, and they had a guest instructor come in. They have it every time, and this particular year's instructor was George Healy from FDNY, who is the head liaison from FDNY during the Governor's Island UL test, and he really gave me my first exposure into the research and the data from the UL testing. And that was right. It was right after the ventilation studies were concluded, and he went through and started going through these principles and the data that they gained from the studies. And I just sat there dumbfounded with my mouth open, and all these light bulbs started going off in my head, and I started recalling all of these fires that I had been to where there was less than favorable outcomes, either from things that I had done or, you know, other crews had done on the fire ground. And where you had just chalked it up to was, wow, that was close, or wow, that, you know, that was a coincidence. It's, well, no, a lot of these things aren't coincidences, or, you know, they weren't just arbitrary close calls. A lot of times that we can connect certain events to, you know, things deteriorating. Yes, there are times when things just, when the clock's against us and the conditions are against us, but, you know, there's a large part of the time when you can trace back to certain events happening to, you know, negative implications. So after I did that, I said, wow, you know, this whole time, you know, I thought I was doing the right thing, you know, using the principles that I had been taught in, you know, drill school and, you know, the basic principles that you were taught, you know, reading the books and, you know, talking to different guys, you know, those old slogans of, you know, vent early, vent often, and vent as you go. And, you know, those are all good, but there's other information that needs to come along with it to make sure that they're effective. Because as BJ said, there's a positive and negative side to our tactics. And if we're not employing them correctly and we're not taking all the variables into consideration, that's when we're going to drift over to the negative side. And that was what happened with me is, you know, a lot of it was, you know, due to, you know, being a new ladder company firefighter and, you know, being in those roles for the first time. You know, unfortunately learned things the hard way, and I was lucky enough where none of those, you know, resulted with any injuries. But after I started having those epiphany moments, I said, I got to get this stuff on paper and put it into a program and, you know, deliver it to our guys, because, you know, the guys need to know about this, because this is such important information, because your ventilation tactics can make or break the incident. That could be the difference of, you know, the engine company making that push, or you making that grab, or, you know, getting pushed out and going defensive. So after I put the program together, it just kind of grew legs, and, you know, here we are going for round three out at FDIC next year. So that's, you know, my biggest thing is to, if people can learn from, you know, my mistakes and learn from my experiences, and you know the experiences of others. That's how you learn, and especially the line of duty deaths and the near miss case studies. That's how you honor the people that made the ultimate sacrifices to learn from their experiences, so we can prevent these the avoidable loss and reduce the amount of losses that we incur on the fire ground. Is that obviously our job is dangerous, and we're never going to mitigate the risk. But if we can make ourselves smarter and allow us, which actually allows us to be more aggressive, we can do that and hopefully go home at the end of our shift. So all right, we're just about on top of the witching hour. So Dave, I'm going to kick it to you for a last thought. Anything else you want to add, or just closing remarks?
I wanted to bring up something. We were talking about truck stuff and ventilation and things like that, and I shot something over to Frank a little earlier today. We were talking about ventilation, and I had a fire a couple of weeks ago, and the guys did a great job, and they had their transmission was a large amount of fire coming out of the back of this place. They said, we're going to knock from the outside real quick. They were forcing the door, and they went in, fire went out pretty quick. The only thing that I noticed that the ventilation was going as they were pushing the lines through, they were venting the upper windows, they were casement-style windows. So if anybody knows what casement-style windows are, they're the windows, and they have metal, in between the sashes as opposed to wood. So I noticed when I did my walk around after the fire was out, they had ladders to every window. It was textbook truck work stuff, with the exception of they never took the casements out of any of the windows. So if anybody came to that, it was essentially bars on the windows still. So it's one of those things, your situational awareness, and I really got all my truck officers and my rapid intervention company officers, these are the things you guys got to look at, and that you guys have to take into consideration to make the building safe to go into and come out of if need be. So I just wanted to pass that on out there. You're still running into these style of windows, and venting, it's way beyond just breaking windows and trying to get smoke out of the building. It's making it so not only if you decide to take a window, you need to make sure that if somebody has to come out of it, they can safely. So that's kind of wanted to throw that out there into the airwaves for just people to think about.
And just got to throw a shout out to Paul Combs. One of my favorite illustrations that he did was of the tower ladder up to a deck of cards, and one of the guys in the bucket reaching out, and the other guy says to him, hurry up, already. It's just ventilation, and it just paints that perfect picture of it. It's ventilation is not just some arbitrary thing that it's not just smashing windows and cutting holes in the roof. There's a great Tom Brennan cut out there that it's not a cut and bust operation, that can make or break the incident. So we need to fully understand what's going on before we just go ahead and take that window or cut that hole in the roof, because there's a lot that goes on after that takes place, and we need to have all of our ducks in a row before we go ahead and do those things. So PJ, closing remarks.
No, I just thank you, Nick, and thank Frank for the opportunity. Frank kind of abandoned us. He's down there making pizzas, so I thank him for having us on tonight. FDIC is a long way away, but it's really not. Start, get your registration done. Hotels book up quick. Classes fill up quick. So if there's something you want to do this year, FDIC it is, but make sure you book early, because you want to be downtown. You don't want to be out in some remote location, so... Nick, thanks for the opportunity tonight. We appreciate it.
BJ, it's our pleasure, and thanks for coming on tonight. The thing I want to close on tonight is just with FDIC, with social media, with everything else, the brother and sisterhood of the fire service is a tremendous thing, and I'm so blessed that I'm able to be a part of it. And one of the greatest things is that no matter where you work, whether you've met the person or not, we can make an instant connection with another member of the fire service, no matter where we go, no matter what the setting. And there's so much to learn from each other. We just got to keep an open mind, and use what information that you can. Just be respectful of what you can't, and it's okay to disagree. That's the end of it. But where it should end is that. Unless somebody is blatantly throwing something out that's completely completely false and way off in left field that could potentially get somebody hurt or killed, you know, that's completely different. But just because you disagree with somebody's viewpoints, you know, just, you know, move on. Like I said, use what you can, discard what you can, but be respectful, and let's just all learn from each other, and, you know, make the fire service the best we can, so we can, you know, do the best for our citizens, the communities that we serve, to actually achieve the mission that we all swore an oath to uphold. So with that, we're right at the witching hour. So thanks everyone for tuning in that tuned in live, and for anybody who's going to be tuning in at a later date, we appreciate you listening in, and tune in about 6 weeks from now for our next episode. And until then, everyone, be safe, and we'll see you at the next one.